Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Ben Ennis. I'm at Rogers Center. Fans are starting to fill in. Haven't seen Aaron Judge on the field for BP yet. Might have just been a one-time thing yesterday for the Yankee slugger. As Marla Rivera kind of alerted us to the fact that he hasn't been routinely taking batting practice on the field recently because of the crush of fans, because of the crush of media, because he does enough of that, that there's enough pressure on. He doesn't need any more eyeballs an hour before game time. But the Blue Jays trying to secure themselves a series victory tonight, and Jose Barrios is hoping for a bounce back. Was not great last time out in Tampa. We'll see if he's got a better outing in store here in one of his final of the season before a decision has to be made about a third starter in the postseason. No decision has to be made when the Blue Jays have a lead in the ninth inning of a baseball game. Jordan Romano's been that lights out all season long, had a couple of blown saves the last couple of weeks, but bounced back nicely from that and looked at his most effective yesterday, striking out the side in the top of the ninth inning. I got a chance before this one to catch up with the Mississauga native. Very happy to be joined now by Jordan Romano. Jordan, great outing yesterday against a very good team that's been playing some really good baseball, and I know you've bounced back since those two blown saves. I was just talking to Caleb Joseph a little bit about this, but how do you manage that, having a short memory when you are a reliever and you know you're having a great season, but things, you know, you have the little pocket of time where things aren't going your way?
Yeah, you know, I mean, being a reliever and I guess especially a closer, you know, coming into the year, you kind of build things in, honestly. It's like you're going to have 65 appearances and they're not all going to go smoothly, right? You're going to have some bad ones. You might even have a couple bad ones in a row like I did. But that's to be expected. And, yeah, you just kind of got to roll with it. You know, it's not always going to be good every single time, and I know that. But, yeah, I mean, you can't wash it out of your mind 100%, you know, because we are humans and stuff. But, yeah, you know, I had the two ones there and then got back on it in Tampa. And I think at the end of the day, it really gives me some freedom. It's like no matter how the day goes, if I'm pitching good, bad, feeling good or bad, like I'll be out there the next day ready to compete. And that's just going to be the whole year.
You know, it's been really interesting to watch your pitch mix this season because the fastball plays, obviously, and you had one at 99 yesterday, but the slider is your wipeout out pitch. But we see you sometimes you step on the mound and we almost never see the fastball some outings. What goes into that? Is that a matchup thing? Is it how you feel coming out of the bullpen? What goes into that?
Yeah, I guess it is a matchup thing sometimes. But other times it's like I could throw my slider I feel like more comfortable throwing it for strikes than my fastball. So when I'm in good counts, like it doesn't really matter what pitch I'm throwing, you know, it's usually going to work out. But yeah, it's a weird thing when you have two pitches, it's like trying to find that fine balance, right? It's like, it's 50-50, right? So it's just trying to find that balance. And I'm sure sometimes I throw more sliders than I should, or sometimes I should have thrown a slider instead of a heater, but it's just, every game's different, and I'm trying to find the balance as best as possible.
How unusual is that to have more control over the breaking ball, to have more confidence in throwing that one for a strike than the fastball?
Yeah, that's kind of been how I've always been, even throughout the minor leagues and in here. It's just like my strike percentage with my slider has always been higher. So it's sometimes like maybe people think I'm not like challenging the hitter with my fastball, but I really am because I feel like the slider is the pitch I get more in the zone than my heater.
Yeah, it's confusing for people at home, right? Because the fan sees 99 and they think, well, nobody can touch that. And they figure all you have to do is throw it in the zone. But it's obviously not that simple. And the slider has been great for you all season long. So you had the great outing, like I mentioned yesterday, against a very good Yankees team that's trying to clinch the division here at Rogers Center. Your team's still on the verge of clinching a playoff spot. You guys are more than likely going to be in the postseason. I think it's just a matter of time at this point. But do games like yesterday, as close as they are against a good team that you might see in October, kind of build up those reps that, you know, give you, not that you need any extra confidence because your season has been great, but that you guys, when the lights are at their brightest next month, that you guys are going to be up to the challenge?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, you know, yesterday, you know, you can say it's just another game, but, you know, we're facing the Yankees, you know, best record in our division here and really a packed crowd. You know, I feel like that was closer to playoff atmosphere than we've been in other games, you know. So going against a great lineup, really close games, it was great for all of us to get reps and kind of similar to what playoffs are going to be like, but not, you know, not as intense. But yeah, it's definitely great for the whole team.
So I was here with my kids, and I kept getting asked, when do we see the light show? When do we see the light show? And they got to see the light show. And I know so much of the conversation has been about having home field advantage for that three-game wild card round and how impactful that could be. I mean, what does that do for you? I mean, you do seem like you're in the zone, so I don't know how much you notice it, but yeah, the home crowd and everything that goes into you entering a ball game.
Yeah, you know, honestly, you know, we've been playing great on the road especially, but at home, there's nothing like playing at home. You know, even from a comfort-wise, you know, everyone lives around here. We don't have to travel anywhere. And honestly, for me, you know, with the light show, with the fans when I come in, it does give me that little bit extra adrenaline rush. And I feel like that's the same for all the players, right? You know, when you're up there, you got 40, 50,000 people cheering for you. That does help. So I think securing home field advantage would be huge for us. You know, not just for us, just for the city. You know, I've been here when we were in the playoffs making playoff runs, and the city just has a buzz to it. So for us, for the city, like, I'm hoping we really get home field advantage.
Yeah, you guys control your own destiny in that regard. So Jimmy Garcia did a great job against Aaron Judge yesterday. Kevin Gausman did a great job as well. It, you know, got on base a number of times, once by the intentional walk. But this is it's a lot of focus on a guy with 60 home runs this season. Obviously, everybody's aware of that. Amongst the pitchers, you guys talk about, well, one, how to approach him, and two, like, that nobody wants to be the guy that gives up 61 or 62?
Yeah, you know, pitchers in general, we don't want to give up home runs to anyone. You know, we haven't really talked about, like, giving up the 61 or 62nd. If it happens, it happens. But, I mean, he's having an incredible year. You know, what he's doing is pretty special. And, you know, I hope he breaks the record. I just hope it's not in not at the Rogers Center.
Hey, Jordan, great job yesterday. Great job all season long. Thanks for this.
All right, thanks a lot.
There's Jordan Romano, Toronto Blue Jays closer, who is solidifying himself as one of the best relievers in all of Major League Baseball. And if there were any doubts about his ability in close games against good teams, that's been eliminated. I don't know what other evidence you need to see, and I guess the postseason's a different animal, but yesterday I felt pretty pressure-packed with a pretty full house here at Rogers Center, and two teams still trying to officially clinch their spots in the postseason, and the Blue Jays trying to clinch their spot at the top of the American League wild card standings in a tie game in the ninth inning. You just didn't face Aaron Judge, but other than that, Jordan Romano had plenty of pressure on him in the top of the ninth inning and came through that pretty well, I'd say, striking out the side. Also, before this one, had a chance to talk to your friend and mine, Caleb Joseph, who was, who is doing the Blue Jays Central job alongside Joe Siddle for this series. He's in Toronto. He's doing the in-game analysis of this series and then the post-game as well with Jamie Campbell. Here's my conversation with the former Major League catcher turned Sportsnet analyst.
Really is, and the Blue Jays and Yankees really displayed that last night. What a tremendous game. I used the hockey reference that there just wasn't a lot of space out there. You know, guys were dumping pucks in deep and going and fighting in the battles in the corners there, right? So that's what it felt like. I mean, it was a pretty tight game. There really wasn't a lot going on in terms of real action. There were spurts of action where maybe a team went on the power play for a second, you know, but look, that felt like a playoff game, and that's what it's about. It was kind of who was going to blink first in a big, long 3.5-hour, 4-hour game of chicken, and I thought the way they played was really good. I thought the Blue Jays really created some pressure by their base running, and that was noticeable to me. They sped up Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at shortstop multiple times and kind of made him bobble some plays because of their base running. And that's the type of stuff in a playoff game, in a playoff series, it's super important. It seems like it's not that big of a deal. Just run hard, right? But it's easier to just Vladdy hits a ball 112 miles an hour to Kiner-Falefa, and it's so easy for him to just jog it down to first. He sprints and forces a throw to first that he ends up beating out. And stuff like that, that's playoff-type baseball. That's when every play really matters and everybody's heightened awareness goes up and their energy level goes up. That was really fun. Everything about that was a playoff style game. Hopefully the next two are just like it because they're really fun to watch and even more fun to cover.
I'm still hung up on you trying to run for prime minister or something. I don't know. I don't understand what's going on with the hockey references. No, yesterday was a great game. I mean, I'll take that over a 9-8 game any day of the week. Defense was a little spotty, as you mentioned. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa with about three plays that maybe cost the Yankees that game. But, yeah, it did have a playoff atmosphere, not just because both these teams trying to clinch their spot, but it was a close game, and both teams using their higher leverage relievers. And the Blue Jays' bullpen as a whole has been really good since the All-Star break. But there's been some bumps along the way recently, and Jordan Romano's bounced back nicely. I mean, he was great yesterday. I just heard Ross Atkins talking about how impressed he was that some of these relievers have short memories. I mean, working with pitchers, how difficult is that for guys who are having a good season, but, you know, maybe back-to-back bad outing? Well, Jordan Romano had back-to-back blown saves, and Jimmy Garcia, I mean, a couple of duck snorts are dropping in and costing him in baseball games. But how difficult is it for guys that are in spots where, yeah, one error can cost you a ball game, but to put that aside and be in the moment?
It's huge, and especially with relievers, because they got to get out the very next day. 9 times out of 10, they got to be ready to go the very next day. And it's a talent. It's an art. It's learned over time. It's experience. And I think you go back and look at some of the ups and downs that Romano's had over his career. Just in general, it helps you prepare for those types of moments. There's probably not a more confident guy with the ball in his hand than Romano. But like you said, I mean, two in a row blown saves, that could derail somebody. And I've seen it derail even guys that have 2 and 3 years of experience, just because if a little bit of that doubt creeps in, that's a scary thing. And especially in September, you want these guys, pitchers especially, moving upward, trending upward as you go into the final couple series of the year, rolling into the playoffs. But they've done a tremendous job. And look, Pete Walker is just, and Matt Bushman, they do such a tremendous job at that mental part of the game. They know what to say. They know when not to say something. They have such great feel. They blend the tech in. They're able to make adjustments with the tech. They're able to really hone in on guys' individual personal skills and what they need. You know, Romano might just need a pat on the butt. Somebody might need a kick in the you-know-what, and they're really good at that. And that's kind of part of the job, is what goes on underneath in the dugout when the game's over and you're having dinner with the guy. Sometimes a good 10, 15-minute conversation with him is all he needs, and just to kind of pump him back up after a blown save or after a tough outing. Confidence is a big thing in this game, and it's hard for baseball players to really show it. I think it's coming out more and more as the game continues to get older. But, yeah, the old adage, fake it till you make it, so true. And, boy, you couldn't tell last night. Romano came out and just looked like he'd never had any sort of bump in the road. But I will say, you know, he got 3 strikeouts with the slider. I will say I really think the reason that was is because of the way he used his fastball. So, you know, the output, the end game was the slider. But, I mean, getting them to respect that fastball opened up some room for error on the slider. So a little bit deceiving, you know, right? When you look at it, you're going to say, oh, yeah, the slider's so good. It is. It's a good pitch. But I think the way he used the fastball was perfect in kind of protecting that slider.
You know, his pitch mix has been really, really interesting. I'm glad you brought it up because, yeah, there's been outings where he hasn't thrown a fastball, right? He's thrown 18 pitches. They've all been sliders. We know it's a great pitch. Fastball is a great pitch, too. I mean, he's got an upper 90s fastball. I think he flashed 99 a little bit yesterday. It almost feels like he comes out of the bullpen, and if he's feeling it with the slider, that's what he goes with. Or do you think it's a matchup thing? Like, why do we see different pitch mixes with him on a different daily basis?
It's a great question. I do think there is some part of it that if he's feeling good with a certain pitch, he's going to tend to lean on it. But I will say that when you are a closer and you have 2 pitches and they're both really good, you try not to be predictable. So there are certain times that certain guys do things to throw the, is it bell curve or just throw the curve in general, throw it off. So if you're a 60% fastball guy, if you go in and throw 80% sliders, that's going to throw the percentage off a little bit, and it makes guys kind of respect certain things. I will say a lot of it has to do with matchups too. I mean, if there's a glaring hole with a certain hitter, the analytics has been so good at showing the players what that looks like in terms of hey, this guy is really, really, really bad on sliders. Even if you throw five or six in a row, you're still in good shape. Whereas against some batters, that might not be the case. So I think there are certain spots in a game where he knows exactly what he wants to do. I think there's days when he wakes up and he gets to the bullpen and he goes, I got a great heater day. I'm just going to use it. And so there's this ebb and flow of a season that's always going on, which is the job of a catcher, is to figure out which one he's got, what he wants to do, and be on the same page.
We saw the Blue Jays pitching staff do a great job against Aaron Judge yesterday. I mean, they walked him once, well, once intentionally as well. It gave up the first inning single. But it really did feel like the game plan was, don't throw him a fastball in the zone. Don't throw him very much in the zone at all, but try and throw a perfect pitch. And if you don't execute that perfect pitch, be content to walk him. And, you know, Jimmy Garcia threw a number of perfect pitches. Would have been great to see what Jordan Romano did against Aaron Judge. I mean, what would your approach be as a catcher against this guy, the way he's going right now?
Exactly what Garcia did. And Joe and I highlighted that in the postgame show last night. I thought that was the pivotal AB of the game. Eighth inning, I believe, leadoff hitter Judge is facing Yimi Garcia. Now, 9 times out of 10, you just walk him and don't really worry about it. But remember, late innings, eighth inning, tie game, leadoff walks, score almost 70% of the time. Tie game, you're trying to win the game. You don't really want to walk Judge, but you don't really want to throw a meatball up there because he's got a bazillion homers this year. So that was an incredibly crucial AB, and he had a plan. Jimmy Garcia had a plan to throw the cut fastball, 90-92 mile an hour cut fastball, and he had to make a perfect pitch or get it off the plate. And he made 3 or 4 perfect pitches. He threw 3 off the plate, and it just so happened that he was able to throw one more perfect pitch than one more that was off the plate. And that's what you have to do to certain guys. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been behind the plate when you have a AB like that. I think 4 or 5 years ago it was Trout. Trout was just on some torrid run when he came to Baltimore, and it was like, look, we're just going to throw up fastballs. He hammers everything else. Our best chance is just to throw this one pitch. Like, it's the only chance we have. If we walk him, great. And I can't tell you how many times the theory was good, but a guy just tenses up a little bit. He grips the ball a little bit too hard, and he's trying to go up, but he yanks it middle down, and then it goes 450 feet. So you can know what you want to do, and it was obvious that Yimi wanted to stay right on the corner or just off, but guys that can actually execute it, the percentage is so small to actually be able to do that in 7 pitches. I mean, 9 times out of 10, one of those is going to catch the middle of the plate, and he's been tattooing pitches in the middle of the plate. So for him to execute that game plan perfectly was so great to see. And that's exactly how I would try and approach every single AB. I thought it was absolutely fantastic the way that they navigated that entire set with Judge and Meza and coming in to face Rizzo. That was perfect. I mean, you're okay with Anthony Rizzo beating you over Aaron Judge right now. And as a fan of baseball, people don't want to see that. They want to see Judge hit it. They want to see him, right? But as a fan of the Blue Jays, you're trying to win the game. And John Schneider pulled all the right strings, and it worked out. That was the right play. Even if it didn't work, them going to Meza against Rizzo, the left-on-left matchup, that was the right play. And that's how you pitch to Judge, is sometimes not pitching to him at all.
Yeah, the key there, though, was throwing strikes with the bases loaded in that situation. Meza did a great job in that instance. So we're going to see this team in the postseason for the first time ever. I mean, 2020, there were a couple of games there, but that was such a young team. It was such a weird season. I don't know if we necessarily consider that part of the evidence that this team can perform in the postseason. But to games like yesterday, as close as they are, with the stakes what they are, they're not at the absolute highest, but you want to win these games. You want to be the top American League wild card. I mean, you have big moments, like we mentioned Jimmy Garcia. I mean, the offense coming through, and Vlad with the big hit in extra innings. Does that give you confidence that this team will be able to carry that over into October when the lights are brightest, when you're playing a good team like the New York Yankees that's using all of their best players in the postseason?
Yeah, I do. I like the way they scored. They found a way to manufacture runs. They weren't totally dependent on the homer. That's always good to me. I love the fact that they do hit home runs, but they were able to manufacture some runs against some really good pitching. I mean, they threw just about all of their big bullpen pieces in that game. And they were able to kind of out, and the Blue Jays bullpen was able to outlast them. That's a really good point there, I think. So when you look at games late in the season, for some reason, they just start to kind of mean more, even though a game on September 26th means the exact same as a game in May. I mean, they're all the exact, they count the same, but for some reason, especially as the standings start getting tighter, as you start moving towards the later part of the season, the hype, the anticipation starts to build. You could just kind of feel it. I don't know how to explain it other than it's just a feeling when you're in the dugout. You can feel the tension in the stands. You can feel it at home plate. You can just feel it. It's really fun, and that's exactly what a playoff game feels like. It has that kind of don't bleep it up before they do, right? Like, just stay in it, stay focused, stay in it, keep going. It's when you lose focus, that's when you throw the ball errant, and then that one little play might be what skews the game. So you know it's going to take a really good effort, and that keeps you really focused. Well, usually when people get focused, they usually get like a little bit, like you can just kind of feel the tenseness of them when they focus in. So that's what that game felt like. I totally think that this team is poised for that. And quite honestly, I think some of the trade deadline additions were fantastic. I mean, the work, you can just see everybody tightening up. Like, you hear John Schneider talking about the team playing with synergy, and that's base running, that's offense, that's defense, that's all of the elements of the game coming together and playing like as one organism, where they're all moving, not just hitting one day and then pitching well the next day, and, oh, we played good defense, but we didn't hit. Everything kind of coming together, and look, it's kind of like hockey. If you get a hot goalie late in the playoffs, like, who knows what can happen? I mean, if you start playing well late in the season, you can ride those big three. I mean, I like Gausman, Manoa, Stripling, Berríos. Get a couple hits here and there, play some good solid defense. Anything can happen. Look at last year's Braves. Anything can happen.
Are you gunning for, like, the Nashville Predators play-by-play job? Like, what is happening here?
It's almost hockey season. I can't wait.
All right, before I let you go, so tonight's starter, Jose Berríos, probably two starts left for him during the regular season. It's not the regular season he would have wanted, obviously. At this point, you can't change your overall numbers. But, yeah, what do you expect from him tonight?
Well, I expect a dogfight, to be honest with you, because for me, it's kind of a jockeying, a back and forth as to who gets that number three spot. I mean, if I'm managing this team, I'm taking a really hard look at Ross Stripling and Jose Berríos, and they're just going back and forth. I mean, they both had some really nice starts. They both kind of had stinkers at the same time. Ross Stripling comes back, throws a good one. Now you're kind of expecting Berríos to get back on that horse, and I think whenever you have competition, internal competition, it's always good. Even in September, as long as it's healthy, and this is absolutely healthy. I mean, both guys want to play for their team in the playoff, and I expect a real dogfight here. He's a competitor, and he's got great stuff. It's just a matter of, can he repeat his delivery? Can he get his breaking ball over? Can he tighten the window of the break? Can he predict it, and can he just repeat it over and over? If he has his stuff and he's repeatable, he's unhittable, and that's what has led to, like, kind of the up and down, the heartbeat style of his season. Boop, good, not so good. Boop, good, not so good. And it's been that kind of up and down, which you look at, he's got a 5-something ERA, but he's had like 20 quality starts. That's six innings of three runs or less, so it's been this real violence. So any kind of consistency he can show, even starting tonight, I think it really bodes well, not only for him, not only for Ross Stripling, but the Blue Jays in general.
Caleb, always great. Can't wait to hear you on the call of the Preds games this
year. You got it, man.
There is Caleb Joseph with a tremendous laugh. I don't know what the deal was with all the hockey references. I guess he feels like he has to pander to his audience because he's in Toronto. He'll be a part of Blue Jays Central, Blue Jays and New York Yankees on Sportsnet today and also on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the game will be called on radio by Ben Wagner. And our next guest, Arden Zwelling, doing this series on the radio side. He will join me in the radio booth as the Fan drive time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Drive time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, down at Rogers Center. Blue Jays, Yankees, gonna do it again. Blue Jays haven't lost a series in the month of September. Last series they lost was that shutout or sorry, the three-game sweep by the Angels after the Blue Jays came off that incredible road trip and taking care of the Boston Red Sox. On the call of tonight's game, Jose Berríos against Jameson Taillon will be Van Wagner, as you always hear, and Arden Zwelling, who you routinely hear on At the Letters, the best baseball podcast going.
I think it's in the top five, I want to say.
Easily.
Amongst Sportsnet Blue Jays shows. Top five.
Yeah.
Right?
About that, there is no doubt.
It seems like there's a lot of best Blue Jays shows.
Well, can't they all be tied for number one? If they're all tied for number one, aren't they all the best? Come on, technically, they are the best.
I don't know. Which one do you think's the best?
All of them.
Oh, okay.
I do think they're all tied for number one, including yours. All right, so we played a little bit of Ross Atkins' audio earlier on in the program. He did.
What were you guys talking about?
What were we talking about? You were there. You heard the whole thing. So the clip that we played was about him doing the thing that I did on the radio last week, which was talking about whatever the percentage increase in win probability playing at home is, and comparing that to the increased win probability of Alek Manoah starting a baseball game. And it seemed pretty clear through his comments that, yeah, despite John Schneider on Thursday saying, we're starting Alek Manoah game 162 if it means a chance for home field advantage.
Is that what he said verbatim, just like that?
That was it.
That's exactly how he said it?
He said, you giddy up. No, that it seems like maybe we're making too much of that. Or me, in particular, who spent countless hours now talking about that one point.
Yeah, isn't that what you needed? Countless hours?
You're right. Thank you, John.
Of Blue Jays conversation? Yeah, I don't think the Blue Jays have made a decision on that, on what they would do in that scenario. I think that is one of the things that is on the table. What are you looking at me like that?
Well,
for?
Because that it could be anything but Alek Manoah starting in the wild card round makes no sense. There's no argument for Alek Manoah starting game 162. I don't see it. Make it for me.
I think it's on the table. So the look, I'm with you, right? Like, I think that I would much rather have Alek Manoah in the game that really, really, really matters. The one that is in the playoffs rather than the game for home field advantage in 162, because there's no guarantee you win that game.
That's it. It's
Alek Manoah could shove over seven innings and blow it in the ninth, right?
That's right.
So I would rather save him for the wild card series. I think the argument would be, and you can't quantify this, you can't put a number on this, but there is something to 48,000 people in this building going nuts. And there is something that players feed off of. There's also the fact that the Blue Jays finished the season on the road in Baltimore and then would go on the road for a wild card series and then would open the division series on the road as well. I mean, that would be a grind, particularly if they were going like Baltimore to Seattle to Houston or whatever it was going to be. So I can understand why there would be some literal home field advantage there and why you would want it. But I do think if it comes down to it, the Blue Jays are going to consider their options. And it's not set in stone. I know we've all run with it like it is set in stone,
well,
but it's not.
He made it sound like it was set in stone. I know I was overdoing it, but like the words are, they're documented. You can review them. And he does say, we're starting, I think he said game 162, Alek Manoah, if we're going to start him in that game if we have a chance to have home field advantage.
The intention was that is among the options.
Okay.
Absolutely, that is something we would consider.
Okay. But
absolutely, that's what we're doing 100% of the time for sure. The Blue Jays will make that decision when they get to it, just as they haven't made a decision on a playoff rotation.
Yeah.
They haven't made a decision on who their third starter would be in a wild card round.
Yeah.
It's not for sure Ross Stripling. Jose Berríos could easily pitch his way into it here tonight.
It's a
matchup. All this stuff's still
too
on the table. Yeah, absolutely. What do you like? Jose Berríos gets a bunch of fly balls, right? Ross Stripling gets a bunch of ground balls. What is your environment? Who are you matched up against? There's so much more that goes into it. I know we spend all this time talking about it because that's what we get paid to do.
Yeah.
But for the Blue Jays, they're going to make these decisions with as much information as possible. They don't have all that information yet.
So Ross Atkins was also asked about the future of John Schneider. It was one of the myriad of questions. It was a back and forth, kind of an impromptu media thing, but general managers do that every once in a while. And he said that John Schneider's long-term part of this organization. He's the interim manager, so I assume that means even if he's not the manager, he's not going anywhere. He's not departing the organization. But I don't, like, if we're just evaluating what we can evaluate as outsiders, I suppose, and so much of what a manager does in 2022, I suppose, is handling the personalities in the clubhouse and stuff that we're not privy to. I wonder, though, how much of the evaluation process will be done beyond the next eight games into the postseason. I think a smart general manager wouldn't use those playoff games, and maybe it's only two in the wild card round and Blue Jays go out meekly. I don't think it's prudent to say you're not the manager because we didn't win a playoff round, and despite the fact that this is the first time we've been in a proper playoffs, not counting 2020 with this core, that our expectations were to win a World Series. I mean, Vegas had us as the favorites to exit the American League at the beginning of the season and take a seat. We're getting a new guy. Where are you on the long-term future of John Schneider and what you think is going to happen?
My opinion, I think that John Schneider should be the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, manager, not interim manager in 2023 and beyond. I think he's done a great job, and I think that he has the respect of his clubhouse, and I think that tactically he makes really good decisions. I think the players believe in him and trust in what he's doing, and I think that there's a lot of communication that occurs between him and his players that is appreciated and that goes a long way, and that maybe wasn't as much of a strength of his predecessor. And I think that for the Blue Jays, that's another decision they're going to make, like, after the season. That's an exit interview thing, right, where you actually sit down and look back and think about, all right, how did this go, and how do we evaluate the decisions that were made and just the way it played out. So that is like the Blue Jays hope it's like a November 5th thing. It might be an October 10th thing, but it kind of depends how this thing plays out. But yeah, that'll happen once the games are all done.
How do you think that evaluation process works in an overall sense? Not just the manager, but like the success and failure of the season. They had to make the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
They might finish with more wins than they did a season ago. They need to, now there's eight games left, they need to go 4-4 the rest of the way
to
end up with 91 wins. So that seems well within the realm of possibility with the Red Sox and Orioles after the Yankees.
Go 5-3 and you won 92.
Sure.
Woo! Raise a banner. 92 wins.
I don't think they will or should do that. But you know what I mean? I'm talking about it because the front office has to take this bigger snapshot of the season, right? They have to evaluate everything that went into it, all the different factors. And the playoffs, baseball is a sport where you play more games than any other, so I think you can do a pretty fair evaluation of a regular season. What happens during a regular season, while there's some mitigating factors like injury and luck and whatever, over 162 games, you kind of are what you are. But when you get in the playoffs, less so, especially when you're talking about now three-game series. But this team, like I said, wants to win a World Series, is capable of winning a World Series. Many people thought they were one of the favorites to win a World Series going into the season. How does what happens next month impact the overall success or failure of this team?
Not greatly, honestly. What happens in the next month impacts the success or failure of this team, and that if they win, they succeed and they lose. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You mean, how does it impact Sean Schneider's, like, job
or
future?
Or the front office's view of whether the season was a success
honestly,
or failure.
Like, I think that most baseball people share my view on this, which is that the playoffs are just this weird tournament that happens at the end of the year, and the 162 is where you actually sort of evaluate how things went. You're all just trying to qualify for the dance. It's March Madness, man. Like, we're talking about a three-game wild card series, which is like 200% more than the prior wild card series, which was one game, right? Yeah. And so it seems like a lot, but still only three games, man. It's three slightly weighted coin flips. I don't think you're going to be deciding people's jobs based off of what happens in those games, honestly, unless there is like some sort of unbelievable calamity, but you're not going to get that at this level. So I really do think the postseason is just, let's see what happens. You get in, if like this Blue Jays team will get in, I won't be surprised if they lose in two games or an out of it, and I won't be surprised if they win the World Series. Either of those outcomes will not surprise me.
Yeah, it's such an unfair. And if they lose in two games and go out meekly, like say they're shut out, or it looks like the two games they played against the Rays in 2020 in that playoffs, and I know game one was close, but they barely scored and they got annihilated in game two. That's within the realm of possibility.
That happens.
And if that happens, I mean, the fan perspective is obvious. It's a wildly unsuccessful season despite all the great things we saw during the regular season.
Remember going into that series and people were pulling out their hair about the Shoemaker-Ray tandem start?
Well, we didn't know Robbie Ray was the pending American League Cy Young Award winner.
Right? The guy who a year later was going to win the Cy Young. People were pulling out their hair about that. That start went brilliantly.
Yeah, sure
spectacularly.
Did. Yeah.
Everyone was upset that they were saving Hyunjin Ryu for Game 2. Cy Young candidate Hyunjin Ryu, who laid an egg in Game 2.
He sure did.
So whatever we talk about going into this thing, what plays out is liable to be quite different than what we project it to be on paper.
So I do like the playoffs, though. I love watching it, obviously.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I
love it.
Yeah, of course I love watching it. But I'm just saying from an overall understanding of the game and my history with the game, I also love it. I love that there's two parts of a Major League Baseball season, though.
But let me say this.
Okay, go ahead.
Who's the best team in baseball
every year?
The Dodgers. The Dodgers are the best baseball team,
and we
know that.
And I think,
regardless of what happens in October.
This is what I was going to get to, that I was talking yesterday to John Morosi about the champagne celebrations and the myriad of them that you can go through throughout the course of a Major League Baseball season. And some of them, they happen after every round of the postseason as well. But they also happen after you clinch either your division, less so the wild card spots. But
it'll happen here.
But the reason I'm in favor of it is, well, there's two parts, because they're cool. And, why would you want someone not to have a champagne celebration if it's on the table? I'm not going to hate on somebody for having a champagne celebration. But because of the thing we're talking about here, that's an accomplishment. Going through 162 games in this meat grinder of a division, the American League East, and finishing on top, despite the pretty uneven second half that the Yankees had, that first half still counts, right? That I think it's such an...
The Dodgers should have a parade, next week.
That's what I was going to get to,
Andrew Friedman should be, carted through the streets with confetti and balloons.
It's such a counter North American pro sports thought, though, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all about the playoffs here. Europe, they would... You're right.
Because they get it.
Yeah, that actually happens.
Yeah.
And you can win.
Because they're logical.
Yeah, you can have multiple different things. You can have the Premier League champion, and then you can win the FA Cup and Champions League. There's multiple different things, but being the champion of the regular season, that's all there is to it, and that's the most valuable. And even baseball purists, though, I don't know, do they still view that?
Braves the best baseball team last year? Were the Washington Nationals the best baseball team in 18? Were the Kansas City Royals the best baseball team in 15? No. No and no. Those were not the best baseball teams. This year, the Los Angeles Dodgers are the best baseball team, and they might not make it to the CS.
Yeah. And they were the best baseball team last year, and they didn't win the World Series.
Mm-hmm. All right, you want to talk about champagne celebrations and how strange they can be. So let's say tonight the Blue Jays beat the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Move that magic number down from 3 to 2.
Yeah.
And let's say that at Fenway, the Orioles beat... The Red Sox beat the Orioles.
Yeah.
Magic number down to 1.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
That's right.
Orioles lose again.
Yeah.
Blue Jays clinch the wild card berth.
Yeah.
But the Yankees blow them out in the series finale, clinch the AL East in the same game that the Blue Jays, in a loss, clinch a wild card berth. Both teams popping champagne after a game in which the Yankees blow out the Blue Jays.
I think the Blue Jays should pop the champagne in the off day on Thursday, though, in that scenario.
Because they clinched it on that day, on Wednesday. They clinched it.
Yeah.
The Orioles lost.
Yeah, no, that's...
What a scenario. Throw in a couple Aaron Judge bombs, you hit 62.
Yeah.
What a great, can you imagine both teams celebrating after that?
No,
they'd have to.
It's a... that is... I kind of want that to happen. Has that ever happened in Major League Baseball history?
It must have.
Dueling champagne celebrations?
It must
have. Listen, we both paid attention to this game for our entire adult lives. Nothing comes to mind, but we should look it up.
It's on the table.
Yeah, I kind of hope that happens. So Kevin Gausman was great yesterday. Alek Manoah, we can go on and on about how great he's been all season long. How do you compare the two? Not that this is meaningful in any way, game one, game two starter, whatever. It could be a matchup thing, too. I think Alek Manoah is starting game one, but Fangraphs has Kevin Gausman as, the the highest WAR, I think, in the entire American League among starters.
I actually think game two is the most important game.
That's another one that's like, yeah.
Of the three-game series.
Because you can clinch or you keep yourself alive, right?
Yeah, like, there's stakes for game two no matter what. Like, yeah. You're either playing in game two to keep your season alive. Like, it's either a literal must-win, or you are playing to take the other team out of it and to remove a third game. There is such an advantage to not having that third game in the wild card series, because that third game is all hands on deck, right?
Right.
You are burning out your bullpen and you are managing that game like crazy. To not have to go through that, to give guys an extra day of rest, to save another starter, that's such an advantage going into the DS. So I think that game two is actually the most important game of the three-game series. Do you like Gausman? Do you like Manoah? Honestly, it's like flip a coin, right? Like, they're both really, really good. I would edge Gausman because, like, I just think that he's a better pitcher, honestly. Yeah, I would edge Gausman. I think he's got better stuff. I know that's a controversial opinion.
Is it, though? I mean, he has 200 strikeouts now. Like, the strikeout numbers, I guess, would be indicative of what you're talking about when you're talking about stuff. And so much of what makes Alek Manoah great is this, like, unquantifiable stuff, right? And that
dog.
he's got that dog in him. And he is meant for the postseason. And for that reason, I do want to see him in the postseason. But yeah, it's Kevin Gausman is just easier to quantify. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that he's, his season is weird though, right? Because the DRA is very much inflated from, I guess, what it should be, and that's what Fangraphs attempts to quantify, right, is the BABIP stuff and the fielding independent.
It's been really unfortunate. The ball's not in play against Kevin Gausman. Like, he strikes dudes out, he doesn't walk anybody, he really doesn't give up home runs. Like, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa takes him deep, and it's like, sorry, what? Like, what just happened?
Yeah.
That was probably the worst pitch that Gausman threw all season. It was like a weird BP fastball. I've never seen him throw anything like that. I was trying to figure out if he was trying to throw a changeup or a splitter, and I couldn't figure it out. I just know it was a terrible pitch. But it's very rare you see that with Gausman. So with Manoah, the ball's in play a little bit. So there's probably more chance of there being some flukiness with Manoah. You really can't go wrong either way. Those guys are starting game one and game two.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays should feel happy about that because, take your pick. They've both been great this season, and you feel pretty comfortable watching either guy on the mound in a postseason series. Guy on the mound today, less so. And it's not that Jose Berríos hasn't been good at times this season. He has. And the Blue Jays have a great record when he toes the slab. But this has been a major disappointment in an overall sense for a guy that is dead last among qualified starters in ERA. This is year one of a 7-year extension. It's been so hard to understand what's happened to him. I mean, the fastball is getting killed, right? Like, in an overall sense, you look at the Baseball Savant page, and it's super blue. But it's the fastball. And I wonder, though, because we've seen at times the curveball not play, and if it just makes teams hunt fastball with him and he doesn't have an overpowering one.
I think it's a domino effect where the curveball is not generating swing and miss, and it's not getting hitters to expand. And so if those curveballs are going for balls and hitters are getting into action counts and they are seeing his fastball and knowing he's throwing a fastball and that fastball is catching too much of the heart of the plate equals damage.
Yeah.
Like, that's the equation. So for some reason, hitters have been spitting on the curveball an awful lot pretty much all season. Certain teams in particular, if you can read between the lines.
Well, and he does. He has the mouth guard in, right? That is, I guess there was a moment in his career where he was tipping pitches with his mouth.
Yeah.
Like, do we?
He had his mouth open for, like, I don't know what it was. Mouth open for curveball, closed for fastball, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do we?
So
think...
now he bites down on it, so he doesn't do either.
Yeah. This team has been hyper aware of pitch tipping in regards to Kevin Gausman this season. You would think if there was something like that going on, that would be something they'd be working on. And then, you know, we wouldn't have the, wow, he's figured it out and he's gotten rid of the pitch tipping seemingly. And then, every time you think he's out of the woods, he's back in. Like the last start we saw in Tampa, it's just been, and even that start in Tampa, well, go back to the one before that against Baltimore. I think he was lucky to escape with the line that he did, whether it was five or six innings, giving up a couple of runs. There was a couple of hard hit balls, and the Blue Jays played great defense behind him. And the start against Tampa, he has the ball deflect off his glove, Emmanuel Margot ground ball with two outs, and then the Rays explode offensively after that, which changes the line. But
Strip was tipping last year. It's something that happens to pitchers. It's happened to Berríos before. They made a weird mechanical adjustment with him where they moved his hands up, flared the glove out, right, to try just so that when he's manipulating it, there's a bit more of a shield. We've seen him doing different things with regards to either using pitch calm or not using pitch calm when there's runners on second. A lot of signs there. The Blue Jays are trying to sniff something out with him. It's strange that nobody picked it up for the last 5 years.
Right? Yeah.
But I think that if that is occurring, you add that to the fact that the fastball is being left in some really bad parts of the zone equals damage. And that's why you've seen the damage against Jose Berríos. So you look at the stuff, like, it's like, yeah, you know, same bite, same shape, same velo. All looks consistent from where it's been earlier in his career.
Yeah, you just use the evidence, and it does lead you down the path that something like the pitch tipping is happening. Before I let you go, you wrote an article yesterday on Sportsnet.ca about the Blue Jays' path to the postseason and the potential matchups and breaking down the Guardians. And I've been trying to pump up the Guardians recently because they're easy to dump on, and then the potential scenario, which may still happen despite the Blue Jays' lead at the very top of the American League wildcard chase, that they might be jockeying between 2 and 3, and you don't want to be 2. You'd way rather be 3 than 2 in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said,
1-3-2. That's the order.
100%. Because, if you're 2 and you're on the road anyways, you'd rather play the inferior team, which is the Guardians, despite the fact they have the same record as the Blue Jays. Despite also the fact they have some pretty good pitching, bullpen, rotation, and they don't strike out, but, yeah.
They don't score runs.
And they play the garbage American League Central, which is going to start to normalize a little bit next year when we get closer to a balanced schedule. But, yeah, all right, so they lay it on me.
You need 2 swings to beat the Cleveland Guardians. You need a bloop and a blast in the second, and a bloop and the blast in the seventh, and you win the ballgame. They score 3.4 runs per game. They don't score.
Yeah.
The bottom 3 hitters in their order all have, like, WRC pluses south of 60. Yeah. I mean, they're giving away 3 outs in their order. Think about that. You're giving away 3 outs every trip through. That's like 3 innings of the game that you are just writing off offensively. I don't care how often they put the ball in play. This is a club with 120 home run hitter. It's Jose Ramirez. And don't look at Jose Ramirez's splits since the All-Star break. Hasn't been the same guy. Jose Ramirez has been scuffling. They need like this 98th percentile outcome season from Steven Kwan just to get where they're going. You can beat that team. It's the playoffs. The pitching gets better, right? All those crappy AL Central clubs they've been beaten up against go away. All those terrible pitchers go away. And the game plans become more hyper-specialized. You understand weaknesses. You attack them more directly. I don't think you need to fear the Cleveland Guardians. I know everybody gets pretty excited about small ball and loves seeing the ball being put in play. But the Blue Jays saw the Guardians when they were hot and when the ball was falling in.
Yeah,
you didn't see them when, like, they, you know, they're just putting all these slap friggin' base, you know, like, just weak exit velocity little flares into play. They're getting gobbled up by shifted, well-positioned defenses, and everyone was saying, man, if only this team could hit a double. They can't hit a double.
They can't.
You're talking about the best offense in the American League.
I know.
Wearing blue out there.
Yeah. They're going to have to play the Rays or the Mariners, though, more likely. Here, though.
We'll see.
And that'll be exciting. You also have no weaknesses, Arden. Thanks. You for this.
Cheers.
There is Arden Zwelling getting set for the call alongside Ben Wagner of the Blue Jays and New York Yankees. It is time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game, and with Jose Berríos on the mound against Jameson Taillon and his 3.90 ERA, the Yankees are only slight favorites, essentially a coin flip in this one. Yankees -108, the Blue Jays 106, as the total is 8 in this one. Elsewhere, well, actually, let's keep it here. Aaron Judge to hit 2 home runs and move to 62 and pass Roger Maris, well, reach Roger Maris and then pass him in the same game. That's paying plus 1,400 if you just think Aaron Judge is going to end up with a couple of hits, over 1.5 hits, plus 170. Vladdy to hit a home run is paying plus 450. Vladdy to hit a double, plus 350. Elsewhere around the American League playoff race, the Rays are playing the Guardians right now. And that game is scoreless at last check. Yeah, it's still scoreless. And it's in play right now, so the odds are not showing up for me. Elsewhere, the Orioles plus 106 underdogs against the Red Sox, minus 121. Mariners minus 200 against the Rangers. And that was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Blue Jays trying to keep the champagne on ice for the New York Yankees. Jose Barrios trying to bounce back after his start in Tampa. Ben Wagner, Arden Zwelling with the call in mere moments. We'll be back from Rogers Center again tomorrow night. This has been the Fan Drive Time. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.